Good morning. If we could get started, I'd like to welcome everyone to the study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, January 22nd, 2009. I would like to excuse Councilmember Dave Richens, who is out of town and will not be calling in with us. So we'll begin with number one on the agenda, item number one, which is to review the agenda for the upcoming City Council meeting. Page two. Page three. Page four. Page five. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, item 8F. Oh, I'm sorry.
8F? Or
6.
6F.
Could use the glasses this morning. In reading, good morning, Chief. Denny.
Good morning.
In reading, you know, this is buying new badges for the police department. And in the, I'm pretty sure during discussion of changing logos and such, we told the public that we wouldn't be spending additional money on logo redesign in other areas. And to me, this is one of those things where we're buying extra stuff when we don't really need to, just to match styles of logos.
Well, let me kind of give you the history, perhaps, and that might explain it. About a year ago, we began a process with the employees about potentially redesigning the badge. It was their selection. We did come up with a badge that basically is the same as the commemorative badge. Many of the officers are currently wearing the 125th anniversary commemorative badge. With that in mind, we put it out for the employees. They chose this badge. We then went into a process of trying to reduce the costs as much as we could. The actual cost, I think, on these badges for everyone will be somewhere under $15,000. I think $13,500 is what we anticipated through a buyback process that's already gone on and one that will continue once we get the new badges. And it really is. It's just something that the employees themselves looked at and decided that they thought it would be a better look after seeing the commemorative badges and something that they would be much more comfortable with.
And Mayor and Council, this actually is independent of the logo selection. This is really had nothing. This was an independent effort by the police department employees who wanted to come up with another badge. It has, I'm not even sure if it even has the city logo incorporated in the badge. It's a separate effort.
It does not have
now, logo. What, Chief, just talk a little bit about what the net cost is, what you anticipate it to be after the employees buy back the.
Well, at this point, we anticipate it will be somewhere around $13,500. We've already collected, I believe, $16,000 in buybacks from the employees on old badges that they had. And once the new badges are in, we'll probably reduce that again by about another $10,000 or so, because they'll actually be able to buy, just for commemoration purposes, the badges they currently have or other badges that they would have an authorization to have because of their movement through the ranks. And that will reduce the cost down. Additionally, we'll have a buyback process for any badges that we don't sell to employees through the vendor.
So, follow up. So the $39,000 is a gross cost, and now you have all these buyback issues, and you're saying the $13,500 isn't even your bottom line net cost?
Well, a lot of that will depend, Councilmember Higgins, on how many of the old badges we actually sell. That's an estimate based upon what our previous sales history has been. It could be lower, it could be a little higher, but it certainly will be in the range of about $13,500 to $15,000 at the worst.
Okay, thank you. Page six.
Mayor, item
Higgins.
Item 6I, replacement basketball courts. Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I just have a little clarification. This is coming out of what kind of budget? Is it the capital budget? It's not parks and recs? It's or it's not that straightforward?
What's the question?
I wondered how many courts are there and how like how many people utilize this. It kind of read like it was coming out of Beth's department, so that's engineering, not related to Parks and Rec?
No, well, engineering takes over the management of the construction of a capital project.
Okay.
And so that they bring that expertise in. Mike, maybe you want to talk about the programming of the facility and who uses the court.
Yeah, Fitch Park basketball courts are highly, it's a highly used park. Those courts, there are an extreme need for repair. They've been, right now, they've been top coated, I think, several times just to try and keep it looking like it's at usable, but we're at the point now where they're crumbling. They can't really do any more top coating with them, so.
And is that, are those funds coming out of the Parks and, okay, this is where I'm going with this. The, you know, I got the official sheet of how many programs we're going to have this summer in Parks and Recs, and basically from, you know, maybe 60, we're down to 4. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, when I look at an expenditure, is that money that could actually be used to take care of some parks programs this summer?
Well, this would not come out of the programming fund. This is a capital.
Okay.
So it is, yeah, it wouldn't have anything to do with with any of our programming.
Mayor and Council, because it's considered, because it is a capital project, the funds that are budgeted for these types of projects are one-time dollars. So they're not looked at as part of the operating budget. We set these aside, and we do a five-year capital improvement program and look for those areas that need to be renovated. Now, you could choose not to do this program, and you could extend another program for a year maybe or so. So I don't want to suggest these dollars are ineligible for an operating, but they're not coming from a recurring source. So,
excuse me, I just have one. I guess it's a little confusing because it says it's out of the operation maintenance budget, not the capital budget. You have capital items in a maintenance budget?
We have, and that's probably the way we set up the, we call it in the operating budget, we allocate certain dollars for capital projects. But those are looked at as one-time capital.
As opposed
capital.
To a budget, which is the capital.
It's not budget. A bond program, right. Which we may typically think of as
so
a CIP.
So just so people understand, because it's a little confusing here to the average, not the average to anybody. It's a little confusing because it talks about the operating and maintenance budget, which just by its definition, you'd assume is a recurring 1 year versus a capital budget, which is a specific capital item. What you're saying is that in the operation and maintenance budget, there are minor capital items,
correct. Yes.
Such as this. And the question is that, oops, you're
I'm sorry.
Hiding behind
yeah.
The question is not that you can't recover, I guess we could resurface them, but what you're saying is that the courts to be usable, that you really need to replace them. And they're
right.
High use, and so, as I'm understanding what you're saying, Parks and Rec management has decided to use their budget, which they've been given, on your how you've set the priorities. Because of the use of these courts, you've decided these are important enough that even with all the adjustments we've made, that this is important enough for you to leave this in the budget.
Yes.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
And talking to our maintenance, they have said that at the Fitch Court has actually gotten to the point where there's not too, it's actually almost, I don't want to say dangerous, but it's
yeah.
With the top coating that's crumbling and
yeah, I mean, we could basically close the courts down and
yes.
Put a fence around them and do those kind of things.
Right.
I mean, and not repair them.
Right.
But what you're saying, if they're dangerous, so Parks and Rec Management decided that this is an that this was high on their priority, so they're,
yes.
That's why you're proposing.
We have other courts that are in need. This one is probably the worst in the most condition or need for a new a makeover.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins?
Is this like just open courts? Anyone comes anytime?
Open
There's
courts.
No programming at this location, is there?
Do you want some pictures?
No, we don't do any programming at the outdoor basketball courts. Almost every, not every park, but most of our parks have a hard court either for basketball or volleyball, and but we don't program at there, but they are highly used. Almost every one of our parks, especially on the weekends and evenings, are almost always in use.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a photo of the courts right now. You can see they were built in 1976, so they're getting pretty old. And on top of that, then they were surfaced again in the 90s with the Suns came in and provided funding for the surfacing. You can see that the Suns logo is still partially there, but this is what's going on to try and keep the courts together. The surface coat is peeling, it's in pretty bad shape, and so they go out and they remove it and they try to keep it together. And then this is pretty typical of the concrete that you see out there on the courts. They are just kind of crumbling apart. So we are losing them pretty rapidly.
Okay. Anything else?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else on page 6? Page 7? Page 8? Councilmember Higgins?
Mayor, item 7F. The dispatch fee we charge to the town of Gilbert, does that cover more than just like employee costs, or does that have some part of like amortizing the equipment that we've purchased to handle the extra volume from these different communities?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, on the dispatch fees that we charge through IGA with all of our dispatch partners, all of those fees are calculated with the cost of personnel, all the staffing at the 911 center, the building costs, upkeep, maintenance, equipment costs, et cetera.
Great. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on page 8? Page 9? Page 10?
Mayor.
Mr. Brady?
On page 10, items 12A and 12B, we recognize that we have another item which will be, make sure I'm saying this right, Debbie, defining the secondhand items that will be subject to the fee, and that will be coming forward on the 2nd? Is it the 2nd of February?
It will be introduced on the 2nd, ready for consideration on the 17th.
So these two, that means, so we're going to suggest that these two items, 12A and 12B, be continued until February 17th, so that we can introduce the change in the ordinance, since we've decided to move forward with the secondhand stores as being subject to the fee, that we can bring an ordinance on the 2nd that will then begin to establish those items that will be subject to the fee, and then on the 17th, then all 12A has already been introduced, and all of those can be done at the same time on the 17th.
Okay.
Mayor.
Yeah. Councilmember Fenter?
I would just suggest they don't be on consent. I've got some concerns depending on how these progress, so I wouldn't put them on consent.
If I might ask, Councilmember Fenter, can we put them on consent for continuance until the 17th?
Yes, okay. Please. Just on the final action.
Councilmember Higgins?
On item 11A, Mayor, that we've had a lot of people, not a lot, we've had some calls on this annex, or 11A or 11B, I'm not sure where it would fit, but we just wanted to make sure that...
Which one is it?
Well, 11A is the annexation, and 11B is the, I mean, 11A is the pre-annexation development agreement, and 11B is the annexation case, so hard to say where this statement will go. But our concern is that this development gets developed with the dark sky ordinance, and I'm not sure if it's already in that section of the city where it would, and not just follow the standard desert uplands guidelines for lighting.
Through Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, I'm almost positive that the council approved a few years ago the dark sky ordinance east of Hawes and north of McDowell, but we'll review that to be sure that it is.
Great, okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Fenter?
As a follow-up and completely separate from Councilmember Higgins, look, I've had some phone calls from area residents. I've tried to put them in contact with staff and with the Reese Anderson, who's handling the applicant, or is the applicant, and so I'm hoping that they'll be able to work that out, but the last notice to me was they plan to show up and speak against this, so I'm hoping that the individuals can have some contact.
Just wanted to point one more thing out. In 11A, that is the pre-annexation development agreement. This is a developer that actually, and an applicant that actually understands where they're building, and they are really far off the beaten path, so that is why they've agreed to go in and put fire sprinklers in their homes that are, you know, a considerable distance away from development. So they're going to develop in the city, yet install fire sprinklers to protect their homeowners. And I congratulate them. I think that's an excellent understanding on their part.
Good. Okay. Anything else? Councilmember Higgins.
Sorry. If we go back to page 8, I kind of skipped one. And it's item 8A, the 29.6 acres. And this is just introduction. We're going to be covering these at a later date. Is that true? Yes.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, that's correct. It's introduction at this point. We're anticipating having it on your February 2nd agenda for actual consideration of the ordinance.
And I know I sound like a, whatever you call that, broken record. That's it, when I keep talking about this. But this annexation, 29 acres, you know, is vacant land right now. So when the fire
department. Golf course right now.
Yes. Nobody lives there. But this is in the heart of
the gophers would beg to differ with you.
The gophers and squirrels. A couple squirrels. This is in that heart of that area where if we had Fire Station 220, we would probably want to be putting it. As far as like the highest volume calls in an area where, you know, we've got fire stations around it, but that would be probably the fire departments here. But we reviewed numbers and call volume, and this is in that area that if we were to get another fire station, this is one of the locations they'd want it because of the high call volume on either side of this area and this area too. And this annexation will be to develop a senior living facility. I just want to point that out. Nothing really we can do about it at this time. Just want to understand that we're annexing the property. It's going to be built to city standards. It's wonderful.
When you say there's nothing we can do about it, the fact that you're raising the issue is something we can do about it, certainly. I mean, I guess what you could do is, are you trying to put on the record that you'd like that to be discussed as part of this ongoing discussion as to the development of this?
And absolutely, Mayor. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, I just want to make sure. All right.
And then it just goes back to that thermometer I'd like to see with Station 220 and how much funds we're raising to get there, okay? And I'd like to see that on the council wall, actually, just
we actually were going to put it in front of your house, so it could be.
As long as I don't get coded, that's fine.
Oh.
Code violation, no problem. Put it on my lawn. Thank you.
Mayor, Council, I really need clarification because I'm not sure what the expectation of staff is on this item. Are we just talking and hoping? Or
well,
are you expecting us to negotiate something in a development agreement, or?
Oh, we can do that. No, I'm just kidding. It was just more of a comment. We're kind of, the fire department really, we don't talk about response times because it's not a quantifiable thing in the building, you know, in there, the fire code that says anything regarding that. Yet this is in the heart of the area where like all these districts meet, and it's a big black, I don't want to say black hole, but it's a big area where currently, I mean, it's Sunland Village. So Dreamland Village? Sunland Village.
Dreamland.
Which is a, thank you, Villa, which is a county island. So we're annexing this in. I guess it's more of a just a comment because real at this point, we can't build a fire station on the corner, which really is right on the corner.
And as I understand your comment, you would like us to be aware of the fact that as this comes in, it's going and is now brought into the city, it's going to add to the pressures that already exist in that area. Therefore, you'd like that to be forefront or right on the top of the list of considerations that as we go through the process of not only this annexation, but the subsequent development, we recognize we're going to be creating an additional strain on services that are already strained.
Yes.
And that should be taken into account.
Yes, thank
you. Is that accurate?
Perfect.
Okay, thanks. Okay. All right. Mr. Brady, is that sufficient for you? Okay. All right. Anything else, Councilmember Higgins? Okay. Item number two, hear presentation and discuss the Fiesta District Design Handbook.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Excuse me. I'm Shelley Allen with the City of Mesa's Office of Economic Development, and I just want to take a minute to talk about this project. The Fiesta Design Project has been going on for many years, with the exception of Councilmember Kavanaugh and Councilmember Jones. I think it's new to the members of the Council. We officially hired a consultant to help us with this project in 2006, but there was much work, you know, much work already going on in the years prior. And through the transition, we've had some of our staff members that have left the city, and for various reasons, Kathy G. with our office has took the initiative to take on this project and has been managing this project for the last year and a half, 2 years. With that, I'd like to introduce Kathy G., and she'll introduce the consultant.
Hi, good morning. I'm Kathy G., Economic Development Specialist, and I am here today with Lorelei Kappel, the project manager for PMC, who has been spearheading our design handbook for this year and a half long process. With that, we just want to talk briefly about, we started this project basically back in 2005, beginning it, and hired on the consultant, as Shelley mentioned, in April of 2006. Since that time, I just want to talk a little bit about some of the improvements that have occurred in the district along the way. As most of you know, the Banner Desert Medical Center is going under a $330 million property upgrade. It's currently the second largest hospital in the state. When it's completed, it'll be the largest hospital in the state. Their major component of this is the children's tower that will be completed at the end of the summer, early this fall. With that, Mesa Community College has also put significant money into their campus as well, opening a $20 million LEED certified science building, along with plans for a $28 million P20 school and renovations to the Harkins and former Fuddruckers building on Longmore in the 60, which they'll turn into a performing arts center and potentially a culinary school as well. Along with that, we've had several other major renovations, including $3 million in upgrades to the Mesa Financial Plaza, which is commonly known as the Bank of America building. We've had a complete rebuild of the M&I Bank. The Hilton has undergone $6 million in upgrades, and several other hotels in the area have undergone upgrades to their properties as well. And with that, we've seen significant motivation from the property owners and the community in that area in support of this project and excitement, looking forward to what we can bring as a community to the Fiesta District area in hopes of revitalizing that. And with that, we've come up with the Fiesta District Design Project and Handbook, which you have in front of you. And that's where I'll turn it over to Lorelei for her explanation of the handbook and the documents inside.
Great. Thank you, Kathy. today, just going to talk a little bit about the product and the goals that brought us here to this project, and give you some time to ask any questions and give you some answers on the project. My name is Lorelei Kappel, as Kathy introduced. I'm with PMC, and we have been working with a very talented team of consultants, including Sloat Landscape Architects, PBS&J, and Liquid Line Design, for all of the various components of this diverse project. As you know, the Fiesta District is bound generally by the Tempe Canal to the west and the Extension Road to the east, Southern and the parcels just north of it to the north, and US 60 to the south, including some area off of South Alma School. As Kathy said, this project is started before we came on. This handbook and this product is not supposed to be or intended to be the catalyst for the revitalization of this really great employment center, but more importantly, a direction and a momentum builder for some of the really exciting investment that's already going on. And I haven't seen anything quite like it as far as the investment numbers that have been happening over the years. So it's been a real pleasure, and it's exciting to work with a group of unified stakeholders and the community that's very excited to see this area change. So I'll talk a little bit about some of the project goals. We were hired to, number one, develop a district identity, a unified district identity. It does have one of its own. Identify transportation and pedestrian linkages, as well as identifying the cost to implement this sense of place that we're trying to create. The project components are, number one, brand development, which is unifying kind of identity, which was financed by the private sector, which is really exciting. Element two includes urban design. Element three includes circulation. Element four, community involvement, and implementation is element five. Together, these elements were combined to create this handbook that is a tool for public and private sectors alike. It can be used by the planners in the city. As new projects come through, it can be used by decision makers such as yourself for evaluating the quality of new projects. And more importantly, I think this document is most exciting because it provides certainty to the development community and property owners in the district to provide them with direction of how they can come into conformity with this really exciting district identity that the community has helped us to memorialize in this document. Page 7 of the vision chapter goes over a few elements that were pulled out of the outreach process. The community would like to see a unique branding and sense of place, a unifying district, an urban atmosphere with buildings facing and interacting the street. This cooperation between the public and private realm, which is often segregated, is kind of coming a little bit more together. Cohesive street improvements to add to that unifying district identity, and a well-connected and engaging pedestrian environment. That's very very important, and a key element of this project is getting people out and walking, and even in the Arizona exciting heat, and getting people to use the district from one monumental use in this district to the other. Branding, the district identity was extracted through a very long and exciting project or outreach process that involved the stakeholders and also input from the community from a web survey. Private realm design. Here we have a couple goals that I'd like to talk about that really drove this chapter. Number one, it was very important for this project to visually connect the district. So visually, tying in some elements that will let you know when you've arrived and establish that sense of place that we're trying to create. Number two, to physically connect the district and its users through a safe circulation system, encouraging pedestrian traffic and safety, of course. And to encourage a denser and higher quality urban development pattern that encourage smart growth and utilize the sites to the best of their ability. Here's sort of a collage of some of the elements that you'll see in the district handbook. I'll go ahead and go through a few of them just for highlights. Let's zoom out.
Councilmember Summers.
Question
yes.
For you. I'm looking at page 7 and flipping around in that area, and I'm looking at the pictures because yeah. Pictures are pretty. But when I look at these, this has a distinctive kind of downtown urban feel, pedestrian friendly, mass transit, walking, vertically integrated mixed uses of residential and commercial properties. And then when I envision Fiesta Mall, I see very large parking lots, the typical ginormous 1970s style suburban mall, mm-hmm. and that seems like a heck of a transition from 70s suburban mall to 21st century urban mixed use. So has anybody actually made that humongous leap from old to new, and how are we knocking down the obstacles, those barriers like requiring massive parking, and what's our mass transit like around this area? How is all that going to change to make this?
Those elements are all very valid and very addressed in this document. Let's see where to start. This has been done successfully in many municipalities throughout the nation. I think what's important here is that the Fiesta Mall is very eager to improve their project area and have done significant amount of renovations internally. They're also looking in the future to, and probably in the near future, to expand and develop some new pads on the outside of their project, of the mall itself, which is very exciting because it is going to provide that interaction with the street, screen a little bit more of the sea of parking that we see today. So it's a step in a great direction. They've actually, this is one of the reasons why this project was structured with a private realm chapter first, public realm chapter second. Everything has been turning over, and the investment has been going so quickly in the project area that we wanted to get out the private realm design ideas as quickly as possible so that all the investment that was going in could take advantage of some of the unifying ideas. And fortunately, the Fiesta Mall has been very excited and very cooperative to take into consideration some of the Paseo ideas that we've put into this handbook for connectivity purposes and developing.
SAO idea?
Yeah, and I'll get to those in the public sector. There's actually in the public realm chapter as well, but I'll bring up some screenshots of some of these as well. In the private realm chapter, we've got some ideas of connectivity, and they jumped on board and really embraced how the path of the Paseo and the connectivity for the pedestrian realm will come in and align and kind of align with their project. So they will, when they do that new development, they'll be taking that into consideration, including the landscaping and some of the other private realm suggestions we've put in the private realm design.
As you continue with this, because I think the questions that I ask are probably scattered throughout the entire document.
Yeah.
So as you go through that, if you would think about how we're knocking down the old barriers, I think the one that stands out is that the traditional parking. You have to have so many spaces for so many square feet, or however we calculate that. How are we going to ensure that we have that parking and it's not this huge black asphalt surface?
Absolutely.
Parking?
Yeah, and it's, you know, and well, and it's been a way of life and development for so many decades that it's something, and you know, and it isn't changing quickly enough across the United States. The expanses of parking in the automobile-dominated areas. But the reality is people walk, or people drive, you know, and we would like to encourage people to walk. And I think a lot of the elements and schematics in this plan will allow a more pedestrian-friendly and more comfortable environment in the, despite the elements here as well. So another one, and one of the most important that I just kind of touched on, is the walkability of this project area. Here you see, which is on page 53 of your private realm design guidelines. Here you see the private realm design public and private circulation map. This is probably the backbone of this plan. I'm sorry, I can't zoom out too much more, but what you see here is a very involved map that has a lot of elements on it. And what the purpose of this is to tie together the exciting improvements that can happen between the public and private realm, and show where they come together, and show where the responsibility could lie for both private stakeholders and the public sector to make some of these exciting improvements. So this map actually highlights some proposed pedestrian routes, which is the Paseo system I mentioned earlier. It also illustrates a district circulator, which Councilmember Sommers might also help with the walkability that you were talking about, and how do we get people from one place to another with these large expanses of parking in this area and these monumental uses. So the Paseo system, the circulator, the improvements to the sidewalks and for the pedestrians, anyhow, potential crossings or conceptual crossings, an overpass, pedestrian overpass to connect these, and most importantly, some refuges, or we'll call them, you know, kind of oases, and these Paseo nodes that will provide some shelter from the elements and a really pleasant walking and seating environment along the Paseo system. So here's some of all of those ideas right here, and as you see these elements, they're all called out in greater detail in the plan throughout both of the chapters of public and private realm. Some of the elements that you'll see on there also include, within the chapter on page 39, you'll see some ideas for site furnishings and fixtures. There's also another page that shows some lighting and some ways that the private sector can come into conformity with this unifying brand and identity that everybody would like to see in the district. And by everybody pitching in and doing, you know, looking at these palettes, these landscape and streetscape palettes, they can contribute greatly to the kind of the uniformity of the district that we're trying to create and bringing it all together. Here's another on page 63 of the private realm. You don't have to flip through as quickly. I'll just throw them up on the screen. There's also some examples and some concepts for wayfinding. This is a signage program that's been developed in concept that will help, you know, as buildings such as the Fiesta Mall and Banner would like to redo their signage. It may happen tomorrow, it may not happen for 10 years, but this plan will memorialize some of the ideas and the ways that they can help contribute to that uniformity of the district without losing their own identity. Obviously, everybody has their own logo and look for their development, but here's some ideas and concepts. So moving on to the public realm, some of the design goals were to provide visual cues and design features that will also physically and symbolically connect the different users of the district. We have great monumental uses in this district. They're very diverse in nature of use and look, and how do we bring those together with the public realm? Limit conflicts between pedestrian and motor vehicles by improving automobile flow and, of course, pedestrian safety. Creating a series of gateways and a wayfinding program to help people and new people and visitors and people who use the district every day navigate this district. Provide amenities that animate and add visual interest to the streetscape, and provide facilities, plantings, and other improvements that make it more comfortable for pedestrians and encourage that walkability we're trying to achieve. And design individual streets to have distinct design character and an identity that reflects the district land use character and function. These are all really important goals that we've worked to achieve, and here's some of the ways we've done that. In the public realm, you can see right up front in this chapter, we bring back in that public-private circulation map that shows another way that everybody can bring these elements together. One of the most important themes of this project is a Paseo system that will connect the district users. We've got some sample cross-sections and some general guidelines and standards for how to develop a Paseo system through the Fiesta District, which we're proposing be implemented by the public sector, but in cooperation and close cooperation with the private sector. We also have some examples of how individual streets can improve using a unified landscape palette that will let you know when you've arrived, let you know where you are. It's very important for wayfinding and placemaking when you enter into a district and you know that you've arrived and then you know when you've left. This is one of the major key elements of the Fiesta District design plan project. And some of the other elements that you'll see in this chapter includes more of the site furnishings and fixtures that will unify the district, bollards, lighting materials, paving patterns, specific ideas for benches, and wayfinding and information, kiosks and freeway signage. How are we going to announce this arrival? So those are a few of the key design elements that you'll find in the handbook. I think most important key element of this design plan is the implementation plan. It is our roadmap to revitalization. This is going to tell us how to get there and what will provide the big steps and the baby steps for this district's implementation. Number one, it covers in the plan administration. How is this going to work when this project is excitedly adopted? And how is the cost and maintenance of improvement going to operate? And recommended approach for financial implementation, prioritized action plan, which I'll go over in just a moment, funding sources, recommended approach for maintenance management. That could be a key element. Revitalization won't stay vital without that key element of how are we going to manage the maintenance of this district, and development of incentives toolbox. How are we going to get people to buy in and be excited for this? How are we going to make this document not live on the shelf? It's already been put into play. How are we going to keep it there? So this action plan, an action plan's been put together that includes both regulatory and non-regulatory actions, some very, as you can see on the screen, very basic steps that are both short-term and long-term. These are all ranked by priority. There, and you can find this. you're trying to read the fine print. Let me go ahead and give you the page number. You can find the implementation toolbox on page 12 of the implementation chapter, or the action plan, sorry. So this includes regulatory, non-regulatory actions, improvement projects, and those include capital improvement projects, and they all have a priority of when these could occur and when they should occur. And it also includes what department or private entity is responsible for the implementation of these or could be responsible in leading that, where the funding sources will come from. And these are little steps, such as adopt the Fiesta District Design Handbook, put it into motion, or even something larger like building neighborhood associations and beginning that to help improve the socioeconomics of the neighborhoods. And then, of course, all of the details that are outlined in the plan, installing gateway monuments, installing district street signs. Some of those are very cost-effective ways to make some instant change and, you know, bring about excitement and even help with the momentum of this already rolling plan. So really, this is where I open it up to questions, so I don't keep you going too long, but I'd love to answer any you might have.
Councilmember Higgins?
Are we addressing the north side of the street? Because it doesn't, it seems like most of your big drawings are for the south, and I see a little purple lines on the north side.
Yeah, there are design guidelines in the private realm chapter that we have set forth that embrace the community's desires for what type of development they would like to see. And it includes all of those concepts. We actually use some of those sites as case studies for some of the parking configurations and ways to improve your parking lot landscaping. How about your signage coming into conformity with some district signage as you happen to have some money for improvements and reinvestment? New development. It could be redevelopment. It could be new development. It could be just minor facade modifications. But we have guidelines for all sorts of things, and they're notated in the design guidelines for if you are just doing a small revamp and you would like to do some kind of facade improvement to an existing building, here are some guidelines you can look for, and you can actually thumb through and look for those symbols. And if you would like to do, if you're a new developer coming in to scrape and do something exciting on this parcel, here's a great way to come into conformity with this district identity. So, absolutely. Yeah.
Any other questions? Councilmember Finter?
Stepped out for a minute. Are we at the point of asking general questions over? Okay. With regard, I appreciate the efforts, the leadership that's being taken. I understand this to be driven by the property owners in the area, and so the city's taken a positive leadership position, and I think that's great. Originally, we had this presentation at a committee level, and there were some concerns about, and Mr. Sheffield, I see, is here in the audience, how to make this mesh with our current requirements in a lot of different areas. Mm-hmm. And I know that will be a challenge, and it's something we can overcome, but that would be one question to get that evaluation. The other is, I had a question with regard to the college, their future development, everything that you mentioned originally. Do we have buy-in and support at the college level to really make them a part of this overall? So, thanks.
I'll let Gordon start. Yeah.
Okay. Where to start? A couple of things. One is that a lot of the activities that are taking place with this Fiesta District thing dovetail very nicely with the things that our zoning ordinance update consultant is proposing for the updated zoning code. For example, there were questions about parking. One of the things that you'll see shortly, there's a presentation scheduled for the council study session on February 19th. Are modifications to the city's parking regulations, and one of those includes something called a shared parking analysis. And as you may understand now, the current parking requirements are very additive. They're cumulative. What you require for this use and this use and this use all add up to what your total is. And the ratios that are currently in the zoning ordinance work toward, you know, some concept that on December 25th in a retail district, we'll have enough parking to accommodate everybody at Fiesta Mall, as opposed to what would be the 85th percentile or the 75th percentile or some amount that would get us through probably most of the days and just have crowded situations for those peak periods. In a shared parking, we're proposing something, you'll see this shortly, something called a shared parking analysis, which takes into account time of use and peak periods and understanding that different land uses have different peak periods. That should reduce the amount of required parking that's necessary for some of these more mixed-use type of projects. And we that, again, will dovetail nicely with what some of the questions that came up with that. In addition to that, we're also taking a look at the Module 3 section that you'll see shortly. We'll take a look at overlay districts. And one of the things that we would propose is that a lot of the design guidelines for the private realm they're being proposed here would be rolled into Fiesta District Overlay District. So there would be some uniformity for that particular section of that if the council wanted to go through a regulatory process. Otherwise, we would have to go through variances to do that, to do some of these things because the code doesn't permit that. So that's some options that we're taking a look at so that we can try to streamline this as much as possible.
A couple of the things that they're talking about include some things that are currently prohibited under the city's sign ordinance. And so we would have to come through and make some modifications of sign ordinance in order to enable those types of things to take place, particularly signs that relate to commercial development that are within public right-of-ways.
Okay, Councilmember Higgins?
Is there anything in this plan that addresses our ordinance issues with the property on the north that's like lighted and been vacant for years? Are you looking at that at all, of what other kind of things we can do to help redevelop that or help move that along? Or
rather than taking a forceful hand approach, because this was a document that was as a grassroots from the property owners and community idea, we focus more on the incentives and give developers a great reason why to buy into this document. And it does indeed behoove them, and there's lots of different ways in the implementation chapter to kind of catalyze that and give them a really good reason, because it's really nothing happens without the property, the buy-in from the property owners, of course. And, you know, this is had been a really neat effort and a really exciting project for me to work on as well, because it's a very organized district, and the people and the stakeholders that are involved are very eager to be part of something bigger. And they really, you know, I think for this project, the motion's already going, and people don't want to be left behind in the trail. They really do want to jump on, whether they have the money at the time. I think that's what's holding people back. But, you know, I can definitely tell that the momentum is there and the excitement is there, and that there's buy-in from the users at some level.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you. Again, just to clarify, the northern part of Southern has always been part of the discussions, that it's not been left out or excluded. And property owners and users along the north side of Southern have been part of the input and discussions. And as she noted, many of the examples that are in the book are showing ways of different signage, landscaping, parking, using the lots or the parcels on the north side of Southern as a perfect example. In answer to Councilmember Finter's question, Mesa Community College has also been an integral part of the stakeholder meetings and the design process. And we'll be working on using the design guidelines that we have here for new development and construction on along their campus. I think ultimately they would love to extend the edge of their campus to Longmore. And so again, they've been an engaged part of the discussions, as well as the property owners, the private property owners along Longmore itself. But it has really been a very cohesive process with both users, tenants, and property owners. Thank you.
Okay. Excuse me, one comment. You know, I think this is a great example of what happens when we allow what I would call utilitarian planning to go forward. As recently as 15 years ago, Southern Alma School was the center of the universe for the East Valley. It was the place you went to shop, to watch movies, to everything. One thing it never had, other than the mall, was a sense of place. You had a series of buildings and parking that provided a place to go eat, or a building to go eat, a building to watch, but there was nothing else to drive you there. And as we can see now, places that you did fight for a parking spot, not only at Christmas, but other times, now are literally boarded up and fenced in. And I think the demise of the Fiesta area in general isn't because there was a mass out-migration of people, because you still have the hospital with its huge activity, you still have Mesa Community College, the mall does bring people in, you still have activity there, but there's never been a sense of place. And people keep going to places that are unique and places that they feel that they want to be. And so I think this is a great example of what not to do and the consequences of failing to take into account that as we plan, we cannot look at things as a conglomerate of individual parcels. I know that technically that's what they are, but every area develops its own identity and develops an identity that is the accumulation of what happens on each parcel. And I think in many ways that's how the Fiesta area was built and developed and planned. And there's a lot of different reasons. If you go back to the early mid-70s, the whole conflict between what was then thriving downtown and the threat that the Southern Alma School brought, and I think there was a lot of things that went into play there. But we can see in both cases, in a sense, both areas sort of lost out because we failed to create this unique sense of place. I think this is a great step to maybe regaining that. I think that along the north side of Southern, 10, 15 years from now, I'm hoping that you don't even recognize the place, because I think the replacement development that comes along there is not going to be strip center or large parking. It is going to be more urban, be more fitting in with the vision of this, and I think you'll see it develop a lot differently than it has, and I think that's a great step. And I think as we go forward with things such out at the Gateway area, as we continue forward in downtown, that we take the same approach to remember that these areas should have a something that appeals to people, and that's how they'll create a sustainable long-term type of existence. So I appreciate the work that's gone in there. I've met with the stakeholders a couple times. I appreciate their input and their willingness to think a little differently and to recognize that they need to take some fairly drastic steps and are willing to invest in that. And I think over the long term, we'll reap the rewards for that. So thank you so very much.
Great.
Appreciate
thank you.
That. Thank you. Okay. Item number three, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the 2009 state legislative agenda. Mr. Butler and Mr. Stoddard.
Do you want to see it?
Yeah, I'll control that.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I wanted to come before you this morning to give an overview and talk about some of the City of Mesa's legislative priorities and receive your direction for the 2009 legislative session. Just to recap, the session did actually convene on Monday, January the 12th. That same day, former Governor Napolitano, delivered her final State of the State address, and I know many of you were in attendance yesterday as Governor Brewer was sworn into office. Following the 2008 elections, the partisan breakdown at the legislature this year, in the Senate, there's 18 Republicans and 12 Democrats, and in the House, 35 Republicans and 25 Democrats. Just wanted to briefly talk on the major theme. We say themes, but it's really the theme this year, and it's all about the budget. The budget is dominating discussions both at the committee level and at throughout the leadership level. Right now, the Joint Legislative Budget Committee has projected a $1.6 to $1.9 billion budget shortfall for the current fiscal year for FY09. That actually grows to over $3 billion in FY10. One of the influences in this session has been the new leadership that's been elected both in the House and in the Senate, on both sides of and in both parties. We're also, of course, pleased to note that the new Speaker of the House is from Mesa, Kirk Adams, representing Northeast Mesa, and we're very happy to be working with the Speaker in that capacity.
One of the ways that we formed the legislative agenda for this session is to kind of prioritize our efforts into what we call our guiding principles. Throughout the session, we'll obviously come back to the council. We'll provide regularly written reports about what's happening. We come back and talk about specific pieces of legislation to get guidance. But we wanted to have some basic fundamental principles that would give us a consistent, strong voice at the legislature. So let me quickly go through those principles. First, obviously, is fiscal sustainability. Our priority is protecting state shared revenue and the revenues that come to us. That the state collects on our behalf. Local control is also a big one. Self-governance, the ability to for the local policymakers to make the decisions that are best for the community. Economic development, looking to maintain or to expand any economic development tools. Neighborhoods, we're, it's a priority to look, continue the to for the safety and security and also to the quality of life our neighborhoods. Public safety, we want to be in a position to have the resources and the ability to respond to anything that happens in our community, and public safety plays an important part of that at the legislature. Transportation, we want to continue to support the regional transportation efforts, make sure that any of the funding sources that are funding our transportation needs in the region and in our community continue. And lastly, water, we want to make sure that any legislation that comes forward is based on principles of sustainability, that protection of our water resources, and if it's tied to development, that it's also sustainable.
Wanted to jump in to a few specific points, though, that we wanted to highlight for the council today. Under fiscal sustainability, one of the major efforts that the city will be participating with other cities and the league in conjunction will be to reverse the FY09 mandate that was put in, that cities had to provide a contribution. In Mesa's case, that contribution was $1.7 million to the state. We've come before the council and received direction that we should continue to oppose those efforts. And as you all know, the league actually entered into litigation, and that's at the Supreme Court level right now. The Supreme Court did take the state Supreme Court did take jurisdiction of that case. Heard oral arguments actually on yesterday, and so we're hoping that there will be a judicial resolution to that mandate that we believe is unconstitutional. If not, we're working with legislators right now to do it through statute, to where they would actually in the budget fix for FY09, as they close the hole on the $1.9 or $1.6 billion, they'll actually reverse that mandate to the cities. And so we have a couple different routes that we're looking at to try to solve that situation. The second issue that we discussed in some detail a couple of weeks ago before the council was the protection of the statewide transportation acceleration needs account funding. This is the money that will allow us to advance State Route 802. So we want to continue to educate our legislators about how that's a great project that will open up areas for economic development, create jobs, and provide better transportation needs in Southeast Mesa. So that those are on the fiscal sustainability side, those are the two major issues that we're going to be looking at.
On the public safety side, the 911 emergency system, when someone dials 911, it goes to a call center. They're able to provide identifying information about where the person is and the capacity. This new technology that involves with all the cell phones and being able to identify them and the wireless technology, it's an expensive endeavor. And so we've had this telecommunication 911 regional system, and over the last few legislative sessions, because of the budget, that 911 fund has been swept. And so there are some concerns about being able to provide the public safety service that's needed with that system. So we want to be in a position where we can provide any type of support to protect the funding or to look at any other opportunities to make sure that that 911 emergency regional system is on solid footing. Also, metal theft, we've seen it in the newspapers. It's becoming a bigger deal. It may become an even bigger deal with the economy now in the state that it's in. People are stealing city manhole covers, their air conditioning units, catalytic converter. I mean, it's really a growing problem out there. And so we want to be in a position with the council support to be able to support efforts that are happening at the legislature to strengthen public safety and law enforcement's ability to kind of try to get the problem under control. And lastly, on the public safety front, photo enforcement, it's been on the headlines of the newspapers. You've probably seen them on the freeways. Because of the growing distribution of those photo cameras throughout the state, there are growing concerns and discussions happening at the legislature. Along with those discussions, we want to be in a position where we will be able to oppose any efforts that would take the council's ability on a local control level to be able to manage our own photo enforcement program. So we want to, with the council's, we're asking that this council oppose efforts that would have a negative effect on Mesa's ability to make its own local decision regarding our arterial photo enforcement program.
On the economic development front, there's been a lot of discussion about the role of the GPLET program and how that's been used in communities throughout the state. As is evidenced by the recent deal that Mesa has been involved with this program, we believe that it's an appropriate economic development tool that when used responsibly, as most communities in the state have, it plays a vital role and again, kind of another tool in the toolbox that we're able to utilize in order to stimulate economic development both in the city and throughout the state. So we want to make sure that as discussions happen in the legislature that they realize the potentially negative impact that could be that could happen if they made major revisions to the GPLET program. We've also been working in conjunction with the folks at the Greater Phoenix Economic Council and our economic development staff on ways that we can be supportive of efforts to make Arizona a ripe place for renewable companies to locate. We have a great asset in ASU Polytechnic with their research with photovoltaic. And so we want to make sure that we are engaged in this discussion and that Mesa is an area that is open and available for any location of renewable companies. Lastly, we want to support efforts that provide additional infrastructure. What we've seen is discussions both at the federal level and on the state level of stimulus projects or where priorities should be. So we certainly believe infrastructure is an appropriate use of that. And in particular, the universities have entered into a discussion in the legislature about the funding mechanisms and the way that the universities have been allocated resources at the state level. So we want to make sure that we're supportive of their efforts, and in particular that revolves around the ASU Polytechnic. That was even before some of the recent discussions about the impact that the state budget could have overall on the ASU Polytechnic. So we want to be a supportive partner with ASU, telling the story of what ASU Polytechnic means to our community, to make sure that it's a thriving campus now and in the future, and we will support efforts of ASU to be creative in the ways that they finance their capital facilities and other ways that they can provide a good investment to the East Valley, both at the Tempe campus and in Southeast Mesa at the Gateway campus.
All of our neighborhoods have probably been affected by graffiti in somewhere, one way or the other. We see it as we throughout our community. We want to, with the council support, be in a position to support any efforts at the legislature that would help try to get this problem under control, whether that's increasing penalties or other type of working with owners of the stores that control these type of supplies to really try to get a grasp and in control of the situation. In addition to that, the payday lending will also be a topic of discussion at the legislature this year. Proposition 200, which was on the ballot, was an initiative brought forward by the payday lending industry to effectively strike the sunset date that's currently in state law. Back in 2000, the state legislature gave the payday lending industry the ability to essentially operate in business and do business in Arizona. The banking laws that are in Arizona allow banking retailers to only offer loans up to, I believe it's 39% as a maximum amount. Well, this in 2000, they gave the payday lending industry the ability to leverage and to offer loans at a maximum of 459%. That, and they sunsetted, they did it as a 10-year trial period to see what effect it would have on the state, and they decided that they would come back and review that the industry and the effect that it had and put a sunset date of 2010. If the legislature doesn't act, it would automatically sunset the program, and the payday lending industry wouldn't necessarily go out of business. They would just only be allowed to offer loans at the retail rate of 39%. The industry wasn't supportive of that. They put Proposition 200. It failed. And so we anticipate either this session seeing some language and some legislation to eliminate that sunset date and to allow them to continue on in perpetuity. So we want to be, with the council's permission, be in a position to oppose any efforts to remove that sunset date from state law.
And with that, Mayor and Council, we'll turn it back over to you. It's a very abbreviated version this year. We usually come forward, but as for those of you who have been watching the session thus far, it's going to be budget, budget, budget. So we are mainly looking to make sure that we protect those revenue sources for the city and not very aggressive in other efforts, as we just want to work with the state through the budget problem. So with that, Mayor and Council, I'll be glad to entertain any questions.
Any questions? I have one on the payday.
Sure.
You talk about eliminating the 2010 sunset provision. My guess, that's what you have in your presentation.
Yeah, that's right.
My guess is the discussion isn't going to be an up or down, eliminate the sunset provision or let it sunset. We're going to have something somewhere in the middle. And I would hope that what you do is keep us up to date as to how those negotiations are going. And what kind of giveaway, takeaway there would be in order for the industry to remain. I mean, notwithstanding the, what was it, 70-30 or Prop 200, the overwhelming rejection of Prop 200, I think the political realities are, it would surprise me if the payday loan business completely drifted into the sunset in 2010. And so if you would please keep us up to date as to how those negotiations and or maneuvering, however you want to define or describe what's going to take place, because I think that's of real interest to us, because if they do survive, I think local communities somehow need to be given better control over locations and things like that than we currently have, so we can integrate those if they do survive into our communities in a way that doesn't create the kind of negative impact they have.
Absolutely, Mayor. 2 years ago, there were some attempts at the legislature to extend the sunset provision beyond 2010 and enact some measure of reform. The industry at that point wasn't very willing to come to the table because they had their ideas on going to the voters to receive approval. Since that didn't work out in their favor, we're hopeful that there will be discussions. You're exactly right. This isn't a black and white issue. And 2 years ago, the city of Mesa was certainly willing, as you said, to engage in this discussion with certain parameters. About distance was a major issue that we heard about, and we keep hearing the stat. At least it was relevant not too long ago, that 85201 had the highest concentration of payday loan stores of any area in the state. So we know the effects that this has on our community, and in particular West Mesa. And in response to some of our council members who have spoken to us individually, we know that this is still an issue of high importance. So we wanted to bring this to the council this morning, and as issues come up, we will certainly keep you updated, and ultimately it will be your call whether we would like to see a sunset at all, or we believe that they've offered up enough self-reforms to the industry, that may be something that the council's willing to see.
I have real concerns, not only for the impact it has, because I think there is a correlation between proliferation of these kinds of businesses, just like there are in other businesses, and the area, the effect of the area. I also have an added concern. I'd like to learn more about the impact that any of these check cashing, you know, we've talked a lot about identity theft and things like that, and it seems interesting to me that we propose legislation that enables check cashing and payday loan, which require no identification or anything. At the same time, we're waging this battle on identity theft, and even the lowest form of identity theft, even those people who take somebody's social security number to have a normal job. It just seems like there's this huge contradiction, that while we're trying to fight in one area, we're also fighting to maintain their ability to basically create almost a laundering situation where they can go into a financial institution without identification and cash a paycheck, which uses somebody else's Social Security number. So there's a lot of things that I think have come up recently that this entire industry, I know there's a need. The question is, the need in many cases is driven by activities that that certainly aren't conducive to the community, and there are things that we're actively fighting against. And I think that there is that correlation, and so I think that's something that needs to be entered into the discussion. And I'm not sure that we want to engage in the debate. I think that by necessity we'll need to be willing to engage in the debate, because I think it's going to be there. I agree with you, it's not a black and white issue, and we need to be there to be right in the middle of that gray area. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. As part of your observation of the discussions, I would hope that you could do a little bit of research for us. I have consistently heard that there's actually only a very small number of corporations that operate the hundreds or dozens and hundreds of payday loan stores in Arizona. If we could kind of get a handle who really are the players in our community, because it's very difficult to tell, because the payday loan industry is not engaged in the Mesa United Way, it's not engaged in the Mesa Chamber of Commerce, it's not engaged on any local board that I'm aware of. They make a lot of money from our community and give back nothing of substance that I can see in terms of engagement. And so it would be interesting to know who really are the players that own the 95 stores that are in Mesa. Is it really three or four companies, and who are the people engaged in those companies? Where do they live, and what is their corporate structure? Because I think that will really help give us an understanding of who the community is dealing with in terms of whether or not and in what form their industry continues in Arizona. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Are there any other questions or discussions? Then I'll entertain a motion to approve this agenda for the City of Mesa Legislative.
So moved.
I have a motion by the Vice Mayor, a second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Gentlemen, good
Thank
luck.
Thank you.
Item number four, hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, my son Sean and I attended the Progress in Arizona's Bioscience Roadmap event. That was held at the Arizona Science Center this week, and the Nobel Prize in Medicine winning physician explained and discussed things that I quite didn't understand, but basically personalized medicine and the impact it has on the valley, on our bioscience industries that are growing up. So this is a really thing that it's pretty exciting, and that we should continue to look at to encourage bioscience development in Mesa. I think the Gateway area is a perfect area for that kind of stuff. And one of our Mesa residents, Rock Arnett, is on that board and is instrumental in putting together that roadmap.
Great, thank you. Anything else? Vice Mayor?
Sure. This past weekend we had a number of celebrations in regard to Martin Luther King, and we had a parade with a good participation from the public, and appreciate all those who helped in the planning and participating. It was successful. And I do want to also throw out there, we have an alumni from Mesa Junior High and Mesa High School who will be playing in the Super Bowl. Deuce Latouille, so root him on, one of our Mesa people.
Playing for the right side.
Playing for the correct side,
yes. The correct side, that's right. Okay. Anything else? Councilmember Higgins.
Just one more thing. I just wanted to give kudos to Terry Benelli from NEDCO, who's instrumental in the organization of that foreclosure workshop a couple weeks ago. She just got left off the recognition. So NEDCO is the Neighborhood Economic Development Corporation that helps small businesses gain loans. So thank you to Terry.
Good. Thank you. And I'd also like to extend my appreciation for those who were those members of the community who helped put on the Martin Luther King activities. That is a privately driven function. It is not something that is either organized or driven by the city. Much like the Veterans Day, we have great members of our community that worked to put that together and helped to fund that. And the city is happy to participate as a partner in helping put these things on as best we can. I was unable to attend because I was attending the winter conference of the United States Conference of Mayors in Washington, D.C., which was very interesting this time. Much like our legislative agenda, the discussion was budget, budget, budget. And it was interesting to be there at that moment in time and to hear presentations from members of the Obama transition team, to meet with them and to talk with other mayors who, believe it or not, regardless of what part of the country, most of the mayors are going through the same things we are. And the questions were not that there was some grand lobbying effort for what do we call these things now? Recovery funds, stimulus funds, whatever it is. But the realization that there will be a stimulus package, and so the discussion was, how does that affect cities, and what are we going to do in the cities, and where are those funds going to go? And you know, the thing I came back with was, gee, there's a lot of confusion about that. But to let you know that this is a crisis that is nationwide, and it was good to be able to sit down with many of the mayors from across the country and to share ideas and listen to each other, and I came with some very good ideas. So I had the opportunity to attend that. And since I was back there, I decided to stay an extra day or so and attend the inauguration of President Obama, which was a very, very cold event, but a very, very wonderful event. And I couldn't help but, while being back there, being caught up in the moment, remember our one member of our council who would have truly appreciated that. So, Councilmember Kavanaugh, for your pleasure, a Barack Obama inauguration coffee mug, just to make sure to feel that you were there also. So there you go. But I hope that you were able to view some of the festivities. It was amazing to be part of. I've never seen so many people in one place at one time. The millions of people who were there truly enjoying a historic moment, regardless of how you feel politically. It was an historic moment for our country, and to see the celebration that was going on, and walking 5 miles in low teens was an experience I do not want to replicate again anytime in the near future.
Gave you a new perspective on waiting in lines?
Yes, it did. Well, I will tell you just one thing. Going down to the mall, we got on to the metro, which is a wonderful metro system. And that, well, getting on the train was an experience in and of itself. As you know, you see those pictures of Tokyo where they push people in. Well, that's what it was like. But once we got to our stop, we got off, and there were so many people who were getting off trains, it took us almost 40 minutes to get from the platform up the stairs out. It was, you know, just that many people, and it just completely overwhelmed the system. And it was, we were sitting up toward the Capitol, and to walk over and look back and look down the mall, you could not see the end of the people. I mean, you walk past and look down to the Washington Monument, and the people were still going, and past the Washington Monument, it was just wall-to-wall people. It was amazing. So, pretty exciting times. In spite of the cold, they were all there. So, both those were great experiences, and was fortunate enough to partake in that. So, anything else? Okay, Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, there'll be a Public Safety Committee meeting following this meeting today. And then this Saturday, January 24th, will be the 9th Annual Historic Home Tour. It goes from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and I believe you can still get your tickets online from the Mesa Historical Museum. Reminder to the council, we have Monday, January 26th, we will have a Transportation Infrastructure Committee meeting at 3:30, and that will be followed by the study session and council meeting. Thank you.
Councilmember Riggins, you have something?
Yeah, one more thing. I just wanted to let everyone know that this Friday at 6:15 at Skyline High School is a girls basketball game versus Horizon High, which is a benefit for breast cancer. So if you are not busy, come on out and support the girls and benefit breast cancer. And remember to wear pink, everybody, even boys, it's okay to wear pink to this event. Thank you.
Salmon. Okay. Ms. Crockett, are there any requests to speak from?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay.
Move for adjournment.
We have a motion from the Vice Mayor to adjourn, second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.